Sports Radio 93.7, The Fan. Tab Douglas here. Happy to have you on board. You got me till 4:45, and we take you right up to the NASCO Roofing Preview Show for the Bucks and Marlins game tonight. Looking forward to that. We're going to spend this hour, though, talking hockey. The draft is coming up next Friday, and it's going to be a big day for the Penguins because, yes, oh, my goodness, they finally have a first-round draft pick. Imagine that. So we go to the guy who knows everything about the prospects coming out of juniors and Europe and everywhere else. It's our good friend Kyle Woodley from the Redline Report. Kyle, let me let you let everybody know you're gonna spend some time with the boys on the NHL Network later today. Do we know when that's gonna go?
I believe it's gonna be around 6:30. I think it's gonna be in the 6:20 to 6:30 time slot.
Nice. So we'll be looking for that on the NHL Network, and of course, the Redline Report. If somebody wants to grab a hold of it, they can always get that to prep themselves for the draft. How do they do that?
They can go up onto our website, which is just www.redlinereport.com.
Nice. All right, Kyle, there's a little bit of buzz in the city because the Penguins, for the first time since 14, when they took Kasperi Kapanen and then promptly shipped him off to Toronto in the Phil Kessel deal, they haven't had a first-round pick since. The way it stands right now, they're sitting at number 21. Let me ask you first of all, because I'm hearing a lot that this is one of the deeper drafts in quite some time. So put a perspective on that for us.
Well, I do think it's a deep draft. I would say that, you know, I look at last year's Redline Report rankings at the end, and I'm looking at it this year, and I'm seeing guys that we have in our 40s this year who would have been in our top 25 last year. So, you know, that's the perspective that I put on it. I think there's going to be good, solid NHL players available right on through the second round.
You know, what is, and there's been a lot of talk, of course, you know, when the Penguins won their back-to-back cups, and then you have the Capitals, and then, of course, you have the Blues winning for the first time this year, that, you know, it's such a copycat league. The Penguins won it with speed. Now everybody's talking, but you know, because the Blues did it more or less with size and physicality, and same really for the Boston Bruins, that, you know, teams want to follow that mold because, hey, it won a cup. When you take a look at this draft, what are you seeing? Are you seeing more speed and skill at the top? You see in size, you know, what's the overall view?
I'm seeing more speed and skill. I think, you know, this year's draft is one that should be dominated by forwards in general. There's a lot of good centers and some really good goal-scoring wingers. So I think the top end of the draft is going to be dominated mostly by forwards and skilled players. Having said that, the defensemen who will go in the first round this year are noticeably larger than last year. Last year was, I think, a little bit of an anomaly. I mean, yes, everybody's looking for defensemen who are the so-called modern-day defensemen, smaller, puck-moving, great skating. But last year took it to a little bit of an extreme, I thought. I think at Redline we had about six guys who were anywhere between 5'9 and 5'11 and about 170 to 175 pounds, all defensemen ranked in our first round. And that, you know, that seems like an awful lot of really small defensemen to be going in the first round, most of them in the top 20. So this year I think the defense crop in particular is quite a bit more sizable.
We'll get into that a little bit because the Penguins could use some depth via the draft on defense. But if you take a look at the top, it seems like it's a no-brainer. The top two guys, you know, Jack Hughes from the USA developmental team and Kaapo Kakko, who had such a great World Juniors. He kind of lit it up. He was a star. So those two guys seem to be, you know, the best of the best.
Yeah, I think it would be surprising if they didn't go 1-2. I think Hughes will go first and Kakko will go second. And then after that, you know, I think there's a clear-cut number three in Vasily Podkolzin, the big Russian winger. You know, some teams may shy away because he's got a contract that runs for two more years in the KHL. But, you know, I don't think that's really much of a concern at this point. If you ask Washington after last year's Stanley Cup run, did it bother them that they had to wait for Kuznetsov because he was under contract in the KHL? I think they'd tell you, no, we don't mind so much after winning a championship. And I think the St. Louis Blues would say the same thing about Tarasenko this year. You know, they had to wait for him after they drafted him 16th overall. you know, those guys were both top five overall talents who dropped, and I think the NHL has seen the error of their ways in that regard. So you wait 2 years for Podkolzin, so what? You were going to wait 1 year at least anyway for no matter who you draft.
Since the draft, Kyle, is so deep this year, do you have a feeling that there may be fewer trades, more trades to move up to grab a guy that, I mean, we see it all the time, but I'm just kind of wondering that if the draft is so deep, you kind of get the feeling that even if you're in the middle of the first round or maybe even later in the first round like the Penguins are at 21, that you might just sit there and see what happens.
Yeah, I think if I was sitting in the pen spot at 21, I would just sit there and wait to see what happens. I don't think that there's going to be a lot of movement in the top 10 picks because those teams are all teams that are looking to get younger and faster and rebuild a little bit on the fly. And I think because there are good options for all of them, I don't think those teams that are in the top 10 are going to be all that anxious to move out of the top 10. Now, having said that, there is kind of an anomaly this year. It's really surprising that we're a week out from the draft and already six first-round draft picks have changed hands. There's five teams drafting in the top nine that will have multiple first-round draft picks. I mean, starting with the Rangers at number two, I think Colorado at four also has the 16th pick. Los Angeles at five has Toronto's pick. Buffalo has two picks. They're drafting 7th and 27th, I think. And Anaheim is drafting 9th, and we'll have a pick at the end of the first round, too. So, you know, if you've got five teams that are going to be making top nine overall picks and they have a second first-rounder, they might be willing to trade those later first-rounders down into the second round to pick up a couple of second-round picks since the draft is deep. I think that's where you would see the movement in the first round is teams like that who already have multiple first-round picks saying, okay, you know, there's plenty of still guys that we still like left on the board. Let's trade down for a couple of second-rounders here, and we'll take two guys.
Or they could even move one of those picks for an established guy that can make them better, faster, an established NHLer. So
correct. I think, you know, you'll see that too simply because there are teams that are looking to move money under the salary cap so that they can, you know, perhaps make a splash in free agency when it starts a week later or just to get under the cap comfortably because there are some teams that are really right up against it. So I think that's a possibility too that you could see established NHL talent being moved for later first-round picks.
We're with Kyle Woodleaf from the Red Line Report. He's going to be on the NHL Network a little later today, so you might want to pop that on around 6 to 6:30, somewhere in that neighborhood. I know early on in the draft, there were a lot of people here in Pittsburgh were talking about this kid, Cole Caulfield, from the USA developmental team, but he at every opportunity, he keeps sliding up and sliding up, and he nowhere possible is he going to be there for the Penguins at 21, is it?
No, there's no chance of that happening. I mean, I could see him sliding up as high as maybe at the top end, maybe 7 or 8, but I don't think he'll be on the board. No chance that he's on the board past, say, 14. He's going to go somewhere in that range, in the 8 to 14 range, I would think.
Having said that, if the Penguins are looking at forwards, and you brought up, Kyle, that the fact that this is heavy at forwards and a lot of skill guys, I have three or four checked off my list who may or may not be available when the Penguins take a pick at 21. Philip Tomasino, Ryan Suzuki, and Bobby Brink are three of those guys. What can you tell us about each one of those, and might one of them be available for the Penguins at 21?
Well, I think Bobby Brink will be gone for sure. I don't think he'll last till 21. So I would kind of take him off the board. But Tomasino is a guy who we have ranked at 22 overall at Red Line Report, and I think he'd be a really nice fit in Pittsburgh. The style of game that he plays, speed, up-tempo, can score, can dish. He's a really nice player who would be a really good fit at number 21 for the Pens. Ryan Suzuki, again, you know, he's a centerman who has top 10 overall skills, but did not have a really good draft year, in my opinion. Yeah, he scored 70 points, But he just didn't seem to be involved in the traffic areas a lot. I didn't see him really willing to go hard to the front of the net. You know, he relies on his skills a little bit too much, I think, and, you know, stays a little bit too much on the perimeter. So I love his brother, Nick. I think we had Nick fifth overall in his draft year, and we expected Ryan to also be a top 10 pick. But I definitely think he'll be there at number 21 for the Pens if they opt to go with a playmaking center.
I know a friend of the show, Jesse Marshall, does a great job dissecting the Pens and a number of great articles. He's enamored with Jacob Petitlier. I think he's a guy that will be available, and the Penguins could certainly use a left wing, the kid out of Moncton.
Yeah.
What do you see from him just in case we need to know?
Well, I think Pelletier will be a late first-round pick, could conceivably go that high. He's a terrifically skilled and creative player. He's only 5'9", about 160, 65 pounds, so not a big kid, but very elusive, very difficult to get a clean hit on. He's really good east-west in terms of his lateral agility. So, you know, he's very slippery, and, you know, he tends to back defenders in off the blue line because they don't want to be, you know, looking silly when he comes in one-on-one against them. So he's very, very skilled with the puck. You know, he can be ridden off the puck if you can get your mitts on him. But, you know, he's definitely a first-round talent.
Now, if the Penguins decide that they're going to go on defense with that number one pick, I'm hearing a lot about Victor Soderstrom, the kid out of Sweden, or Ville Heinola, the Finnish defenseman. Either one of those float your boat at 21?
Yeah, I don't think Soderstrom will still be there, but I think that's right about the area where you could see Heinola go off the board. Again, a smaller, you know, 5'11", 176 pounds, very mobile, great decision-making process, moves the puck really well. So I think he'd be a nice fit, and the other guys that I think might be available there and could be nice fits are a couple of bigger defensemen, but also still mobile. The big German kid, Moritz Seider, who's 6'4", 200-pounder, already played against men all season long in the German Elite League. And Matthew Robertson, who plays for Edmonton of the WHL, another kid who's got good size at 6'3", 200 pounds, lots of toughness and mobility. I think one of those three guys, Seider or Robertson or Heinola, could all be there and would be good selections. And I would throw in Tobias Bjornfot, a Swedish defenseman who may or may not be on the board at 21. It's really close. But I kind of tend to think the Pens will go defense, and one of those four guys might very well be the selection.
What do you think of Ryan Johnson, the kid out of Sioux Falls? I would assume he would be there for the Penguins. So if they want to reach, is that a bad reach?
No, I think, you know, if the Pens don't take him at 21, he's not getting out of the first round. I think he'll probably go somewhere in the, you know, 24 to 27 range. So it's not that big a stretch to see him going at 21 if that's who they like the best out of all that pool of defensemen. It's you know, a subjective opinion at that point as to, you know, if the four guys that I mentioned are there and Ryan Johnson's on the board, you know, who do you like the best out of that group?
Any goaltenders drawing interest in the early rounds? I think that's a lot of scouts and guys like you with the Red Line Report probably feel you can still get some good goaltenders, you know, later. Any expectations of seeing one go in the first round, or how early will one go?
Yeah, I think that Spencer Knight off of that U.S. national team could go into the first round. The guy that I love is a Russian 20-year-old. He's a 99 birth date in his third and final year of eligibility. His name is Pyotr Kochetkov, and I thought he was the best goaltender at the World Juniors. I thought he was also outstanding at the Russia-Canada series of six games that were played last November. The Russians always send over a team to play two games against the WHL, OHL, and Quebec League, and he was just outstanding in that series. So I think Kochetkov is a real sleeper who he'll never make it out of the second round. I'd be shocked if he did. And that's a guy that, you know, I might be willing to take a chance on if I had multiple first-round picks and one of them came late in the first round. You know, he's a guy I might want to take a chance on.
Finally, Kyle, are you seeing a swing back to maybe, you know, some smaller goaltenders? I mean, for a while, it seemed like everybody was looking for the 6'4", 6'6", even a 6'7" guy. I'm seeing on, you know, some draft reports, some smaller guys show up. What are your thoughts?
I've always been a smaller goaltender guy, so it's really galled me to see NHL teams ignoring guys who are only, and I put that in quotes, 6 feet or 6 foot one. You know, I think like guys like Michael DiPietro, for me, he was a first round talent, and I don't think he went until the third round a couple of years back. You know, guys like that should be in the first round. It shouldn't be who's the biggest guy who takes up the most space in net. It's who's the best at stopping pucks. I mean, that's the only job of a goaltender. And it doesn't matter whether you're 6'7" or 6 feet. If you can stop the puck, you can stop the puck.
All right, Kyle, we'll look for you on the NHL Network later today. Again, you know, thanks so much for jumping on. And you could find the Red Line Report and probably get it in your hands really quick, I would guess, right?
Yeah, I mean, anybody who wanted to order today would have it later on this afternoon.
Nice. Way to go, Kyle, and good luck on your TV appearance. Thanks, buddy.
Thanks, Tab.
All righty, there he goes, Kyle Woodley from the Red Line Report. He's been doing this for a lot of years, based out of Lake Placid, New York, and love talking to him come draft time. Now we're going to focus on the Penguins in particular with Jonathan Bomboli of the Trib. That's coming up next. And will there be any trades at the draft? I suspect that there will, and probably more than one. Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan. Well, they may be talking about a Monday, but we're going to talk about it right now. We're not going to waste any time talking about the NHL draft and will the Penguins be trading people. We're just going to invite on the Fan Hotline, which is brought to you by Armstrong Business Solutions, our good friend Jonathan Bomboli of the Trib jumping on. Getting ready, getting packed up to head to Vancouver, one of the most beautiful cities in the world. And is it true what they say, JB, that it's the Las Vegas of Canada?
I don't know. I've actually never been to Vancouver. This will be my first
really?
Time.
Wow. You're going to love it. You're going to love it. There's a place there I want to recommend. I can't tell you what street it's on, but the name of the business is Death by Chocolate.
Ooh, that sounds good.
I figured it would. So there you go. You'll have to look that up when you're in Vancouver. Speaking of which, the guys just ran a promo for the morning show. Jim Rutherford may be trading some people. I expect, and do you, a lot of activity, maybe the day before the draft, but certainly on draft day from Jim Rutherford.
I mean, yeah, it's a good time to get things done, that's for sure. And there's little doubt after the way the season ended that Rutherford would like to get some things done. I mean, I don't know. When you say, like, a lot of activity, I think a couple of deals, I think, is what is the most likely scenario. So I don't know if you consider that a lot of activity, but if you do, I think you'll probably get it.
Yeah, and I think one of the moves for sure, and this is probably, you know, under the radar because not a whole lot of people are talking about it with the Kessel deal, and since Kessel nixed the move, all right, they got to move, you know, somebody with a big price tag. Is it going to be Letang? There was even a Malkin talk. I fully expect at least maybe I'm going to give it a 75% chance that they move Tristan Jarry and maybe pick up another draft pick in the second or third round. That might be possible.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to quantify the market for Tristan Jarry because, you know, he's not waiver eligible anymore. So a team that trades for him, they're not trading for him because they kind of like his potential. They're trading for him because they want him to be their backup goalie in the NHL. And that obviously that limits your pool of teams that, you know, that are looking for a backup goalie. There's some, you know, there's maybe four or five. And if you can find the right match, then you can move Jarry. I know they'd like to get more draft picks in this draft because it's a deep draft and the Penguins like it. And they, as much as, you know, we've talked about how they kept their first round pick, they don't have any in the second or third. So, you know, and whether you can get a second or third for Jarry, I don't know, but you can certainly add a draft pick where you can get a player. So, and then, you know, option B is you put him on waivers in September and you risk losing him for nothing, and that's not an attractive option.
And I'm looking at those ahead of them in the draft. I mean, they're picking 21st in the first round. And we just talked to Kyle Woodley from the Red Line Report. He seems to think there are real good players deep into this draft, into the second round. I think he said where, you know, guys are ranked 40 would have been, you know, the guys that are ranked 40 currently in this year's draft would have been, you know, 20 to 25 in previous drafts. I mean, that's how deep it is. But I take a look, JB, and I'm looking at Edmonton, who wants to improve themselves quickly, fast, at number 8. You got Anaheim, who the Penguins have traded, you know, with on a regular basis at number 9. You got the Florida Panthers at 13, and you got Arizona. Hello, can you say Phil Kessel at number 14? Do you think there's any possibility that the Penguins might be able to pull one of those early picks by moving one of their big guys and saving cap space, which they need?
Yeah, I think they're more likely to move down than up. Because, and I don't have the draft order in front of me, but there's a couple of teams. I'm trying to think of them off the top of my head. Carolina's one of them, I know, that have multiple picks between, like, say, you know, 28 and 40. And if you moved out of 21 and got 2 for 1, then you get 2 of those players that you're talking about in the depth thing. When you're talking about what the Penguins have available to trade, and you're talking about Kessel, and you're talking about a defenseman, you know, Oimada would probably be the most valuable of the defensemen that, I mean, leaving out of Letang, there's a real outside shot on Letang. But the problem with trading Chris Letang is you have to replace Chris Letang. And you're really threading the needle in terms of the deal you'd have to make. I don't think there's any chance you'd trade Chris Letang for a draft pick. I mean, that's, you're just asking for trouble. That's a rebuild. And what they're talking about doing is a retool. So, you know, you can't rule it out, but you couldn't rule it out at any point in the last year. And it's just, I don't see it materialize. So what you're talking about is a Kessel, Amata, you know, maybe some other guys further down the line. I don't think that gets you into the top half of the first round. And I think Rutherford's, you know, if we've learned anything from the Minnesota business with Kessel for Zucker, is that he's looking for a hockey trade. So I think that's more likely. If you're going to see, you know, I imagine a hockey trade for players, at least from a Kessel perspective, and then maybe moving down out of the first round or to the back end of the first round to get multiple picks. I think that's more likely than moving up.
But he still wants to create some cap space, and he's got some restricted free agents he needs to sign. So, you know, that has to be taken into consideration, too.
Well, he's got 9 defensemen. Once Pettersson signs, he'll have 9 defensemen on 1-way contracts. So one of them's got to go. And if it's Mata, that's basically the way I see it, is that you move a defenseman. If you ask me, they'd be better off moving Jack Johnson, but it's obviously hard to do because of his contract.
Yep.
You know, you default to Mata, and that's the move for a draft pick that clears up your salary cap situation, more or less. I mean, I did the math, and if you look at the projections for all their restricted free agents, you're talking Pettersson will cost the most, then Bluger, Aston Reese, Adam Johnson. Those are the big 4 that are left now that Ricola has signed. You add that all up, and they're going to get to be a little over $85 million, including everybody. And the cap is projected to be between 82 and 83. So you subtract Mata and his 4, and that takes care of your cap problem. So that's like the basically, to me, that's the building block. That's the fundamental. That's the necessity. You do that, you move a defenseman to become cap compliant. From there, you're trying to make moves to make your team better, and they all have to be fairly revenue neutral. You know, and but that's how they've operated for years now. I mean, they haven't been in a position to move a draft pick for a star player for a really long time. So to me, that sounds really, you know, there could be, Rutherford could obviously have a more in-depth sort of strategy in mind. But to me, you move the defenseman for the cap space, and then you make hockey trades on top of that.
Hmm. That'll be interesting. I'm sure they would love to get into the second or third round there and, you know, cover that hole, as you mentioned, because they're going at 21 in the first round and then all the way to the fourth round with Buffalo's pick, which they picked up for Connor Sherry. And then they go, what, fifth and no sixth and two in the seventh.
Sure. And for a deep draft, yeah, you're going to want picks if you can get them. That's why, to me, and he has, you know, they have lately, by lately, I mean like in the last almost decade, they've shown a willingness to move out of that first round and then and jump up in the second for guys that they like. I mean, that's how they got Jari in the first place. That's a Sprong situation. That's a Hallander and Kalen Addison. Like that sweet, that area around 40 has been their sweet spot. Hey, you know what I think is interesting? That you look at the picks that they've made around 21, like 20, 21, 22 in the last 10 years or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
They got Matta there. They got Joe Morrow there. They got Bo Bennett there. And they got Kasperi Kapanen there. Those are the four guys. This is a deeper draft than that. So that's the baseline of the kind of talent you can expect at 21. That's pretty exciting. And if you get a player better than those four, staying at 21, that guy better than those four is a pretty good player.
Do you think that they're more likely to reach for a defenseman than take a forward? Because Kyle Woodleaf said, you know, this draft is top heavy with skilled forwards.
I think they're in a position where, look, they don't have a ton of forwards either. They have a ton of forwards who can play for you at the NHL level. You know, like Adam Johnson's a great example of that. Like, he could play right now if he had to, but I don't think he's going to, you know, be a Calder Trophy candidate or anything. Bjorkqvist is the same way. There are guys that project as solid players, but nobody who necessarily projects as a difference maker. I mean, if you can get a guy like that at forward, you do it. I think it depends on how it shakes out, how the draft shakes out. If the other 20 teams ahead of them love the forwards too, and there's a huge run on forwards, and then all of a sudden you can get the third best defenseman in the draft at pick 21 or something like that, well, geez, you jump on it because your defenseman pool is, you know, even more shallow than your forward pool is. So yeah, it could break down that way. Absolutely.
Well, it's going to be interesting. When do you leave for Vancouver? You leaving early? Get a chance to spend some time out there?
No, not so much. Leaving Thursday, coming home Sunday. Hope them for a little bit of time, but, you know, just enough to see the sights.
Yeah, good. So check out Death by Chocolate and give me a report when you get back.
You got it, Tab. I won't miss it.
All right, there you go. Jonathan Bomboli, thanks so much. We'll look for your draft coverage in the Trib as well. Thanks, buddy. Appreciate it.
You bet. Thank you.
All right, there he goes. Jonathan Bomboli. He's heading out to Vancouver. We're heading to an update, and then we'll open up the phone lines a little bit, talk about whatever you want to talk about. Next hour, we're going to get into stopping base brawls, like the one that almost broke out between the Bucks and Donaldson the other night, Musgrove and Donaldson. Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan. Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan. Tab Douglas here, taking it right up to 4:45 in the NASCO Roofing Preview Show with Jack Sorensic and Dan Zangrilli. Dario Agrizal is getting the start, his major league debut, the 24-year-old who started the season in AAA, or actually AA, coming up from AAA after six starts there. I want to remind you the sold-out Fan Open has one more foursome left, and it could be yours. Just tweet us at 93.7TheFan. Use the hashtag FanOpenContest and tell us why you should be at the Fan Open coming up on Friday, June 21st. Brought to you by Bowser Chevy, Manor Valley, Coors Light, Keystone Shooting Center, Mike's Beer Bar, Fireball Whiskey, and Maker's Mark. Coming up after the top of the hour, we're going to be talking to Vince Comunale from the Point of Pittsburgh, who put up an interesting story, and it was actually something I was thinking about during the week after the Musgrove Josh Donaldson fiasco that we had to put up with, and the brawl and the shouting and Musgrove getting pulled in the first inning, getting thrown out of the game, not pulled, but thrown out of the game. What do you think about baseball brawls? Do you like them the way they are? The scrums, the pushing and shoving, the potential for players to be hurt, getting spiked, being stepped on, you know, all that other stuff? Or is there a way to kind of curb it or at least control it? We're going to talk to Vince about his thoughts, and maybe we'll get yours as we approach the NASCO Roofing Preview Show coming up next hour. 412-928-9370, that is a number to call. If you want to text us, you can do that because that's the Edgar Snyder & Associates fan text line as well. Edgar Snyder & Associates reminds you to text responsibly. And if you want to follow along on Twitter, at 937TheFan, driven by Shorkey Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram, with locations in North Huntington and the North Hills. And as a preview to the NASCO Roofing Preview Show, if you want to pop online, Matty Ice, Matt Harkins, my producer here, put up the interview we did with Corey Geiger from the Altoona Mirror and ESPN Radio in Altoona on the scouting report on Agrizal, who's getting the start tonight. He's seen him for the last couple of years in Altoona. So some interesting thoughts there and some interesting thoughts about Keller and Glasnow. And since we're on the topic of Glasnow, I noticed that the Tampa Bay Rays played today, which means that Austin Meadows was in the lineup again for Tampa Bay. Boy, is he cooled off. He was burning it up. And I'll give you, for instance, in the month of May, he hit .356. In the month of April, he hit .383. And everybody was clamoring, oh, this guy's going to, you know. Well, he went 0-for-4 today, which means he is 2 for his last 25. And in the month of June, he is 12-for-56, which is real close to 200. Because heading into today's game, he's hitting .231 for the month of June. So he's really, really cooled off. And he hasn't hit a home run. Remember when we went on a home run streak? He hasn't hit a home run in June, and his last one came May 28th. No home runs. And he's got 3 RBI in the month of June. So things have really cooled off for Austin Meadows. Just thought I'd mention that as we keep an eye on the Meadows watch.